Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with testimony by senior intelligence officials before a House panel on Tuesday, where Director of National Intelligence James Clapper said that learning the intentions of foreign leaders is a key goal of U.S. spying agencies, contradicting Senate Intelligence Committee Chairwoman Dianne Feinstein, who called for an end to eavesdropping on leaders of countries allied with the United States. Elizabeth Goitein, the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, joins us to discuss the growing international outrage over the latest NSA revelations. Then, following profuse apologies and testimony from the government official in charge of the troubled healthcare.gov website, we will speak with the author of an article in National Affairs, Kludgeocracy, the American Way of Policy. Stephen Tellis, a professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, joins us to discuss the clumsy and inelegant patchwork of solutions known as kludges that are at the heart of the dysfunction between the government and private contractors in the context of a larger ideological battle over the size of government. Then finally, we'll speak with Dr. Ali Al-Yami, the founder and director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Saudi Arabia, about the Saudi women who are defying the repressive religious police and the feudal government by driving cars, an activity that is banned for fear it will encourage licentiousness and damage women's ovaries. We'll discuss stirrings of protests for freedom and democracy in a tightly controlled country under the absolute rule of a royal family determined to insulate their kingdom from the Arab Spring. Joining us now is Elizabeth Goitein, who is the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, which seeks to advance effective national security policies that respect constitutional values and the rule of law. Previously, she was counsel to Senator Feingold, chairman of the Constitution Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Goitein.
My pleasure.
And there was testimony on Capitol Hill on Tuesday before the House Select Intelligence Committee. James Clapper contradicted Senator Feinstein, who had earlier expressed her displeasure at the idea of spying on allies and leaders of countries allied with the United States. But James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, contradicted her by saying that the intentions to spy on foreign leaders or to learn about the intentions of foreign leaders is a key goal of U.S. spying agencies. So who's likely to win this argument, Senator Feinstein, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, or James Clapper, the DNI?
I think it depends on what you mean by win. If you mean who's right, it's probably closer to what we heard from Clapper, that in fact, you know, foreign countries spy on each other. They spy on other foreign leaders. This is a fairly traditional practice. In terms of who's likely to win politically, I think it is very much to the detriment of the NSA that we are starting to see some chinks in the united front of the president, the NSA, and the intelligence committees of Congress. So both the president and Dianne Feinstein and the intelligence committees are to some degree beginning to distance themselves a bit, at least from this particular practice, and I think that does not bode well for the NSA.
Well, where there seems to be a real disconnect here is where Senator Feinstein said that both Barack Obama and members of her Senate Intelligence Committee, which is supposed to receive classified briefings, have been kept in the dark about these operations targeting foreign leaders. And that, of course, is not what General Alexander, the NSA director, is saying.
And that's a real he said, she said at this point. I mean, we have officials on and off the record contradicting what we're hearing from the president and what we're hearing from Senator Feinstein. And that's, you know, that's a troubling issue. It's important that we know what information the intelligence committees and certainly the president get from the NSA. And, you know, it's hard to know when the public, by definition, is cut out of these transactions, and then you get differing accounts from the people who are involved.
So is it possible then that, you know, a lot of people have suggested the NSA is a rogue agency, but short of that, is it possible that because they've got these extraordinary capabilities that nobody else has, that they simply use them, they do it because they can do it, and they don't really think it through because maybe that's not where their focus is? In other words, what's the cost-benefit analysis here of spying on Merkel's cell phone vis-a-vis the downside of what these revelations are causing?
I think that's a very good way to frame it, which is that the job of the NSA is to collect foreign intelligence. That is their job. And some of the oversight and, policy issues about whether or not it's wise to engage in certain kinds of foreign intelligence collection, those are really secondary in the NSA's mission. And the people who have the authority to conduct the surveillance and the people who have the information about what's actually happening are the people within the NSA whose mandate is to get the intelligence. And so we have a situation where there really isn't a lot of built-in incentive for the NSA to think about some of the policy consequences, some of the broader policy consequences of some of its policies, and to really throw its efforts into meaningful, robust oversight.
So do you think that this idea of the Five Eyes, this echelon program that's been going on for a long time, where the U.S., Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and Great Britain agree not to spy on each other and to share their intelligence. And in fact, it allegedly goes much further, where the Canadians spy on the Americans spy on the Canadians, the Australians on the Brits, and back and forth. So each country is immune from charges that it spies on its own citizens. And that's a kind of reciprocal agreement that they have. But there's a sort of, it sort of feels a bit like the white man's burden, doesn't it? These are all Anglo-Saxon countries, and I think that the Germans and the French and others are saying, wait a minute, why do you guys get preferential treatment?
Well, according to reports, we've had similar sharing arrangements with the Germans, the French, the Spanish. There's also been a memorandum of understanding disclosed about sharing information with Israel. So it's true that the Five Eyes have a bit of a privileged status, but there's also a good amount of information sharing that we're learning about with other countries as well. So I don't think these other countries need to feel too left out from what I've read.
So how much of this is kabuki then? How much is this just like the scene in the classic movie Casablanca where Claude Rains says, my God, there's gambling going on in this establishment? I mean, who is huffing and puffing, and where do you think the real issues are? Because it seems that really the issues are more about not so much that people spy on each other, but the issues really seem to be more about the leaks, and in this case the leaker, Edward Snowden. In other words, he's done us all a favor in terms of what he's revealed in terms of what's been going on domestically. But clearly, in terms of foreign intelligence, he's really thrown a cat amongst the pigeons.
I wouldn't say it's kabuki theater exactly. I think there are some real and important disagreements within Congress on what the NSA should be doing and what it should not be doing. There may be a little political cover involved in, expressing outrage about spying on foreign leaders, because there are some challenges with the optics of that kind of spying that apparently are less problematic when it comes to collecting telephone records of Americans. But I do think that there are genuine, substantive, deep disagreements within Congress about whether the NSA should collect any and all information that it can collect on Americans as well as people overseas in its mission to try to prevent the next terrorist attack, or, on the other hand, whether there should be some privacy protections for Americans that stem from the Fourth Amendment or from just our constitutional values that attach to our communications and to our personal information in the absence of any sort of suspicion that Americans are involved in illegal activity. And I think that is a fundamental disagreement that is at the heart of the legislative debates that we're seeing now in Congress and the public debate as well.
Again, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Goitein, who is the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, which seeks to advance effective national security policies that respect constitutional values and the rule of law. Previously, she was counsel to Senator Feingold, chairman of the Constitution Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So we already saw the very close vote in Congress in response to the revelations from Edward Snowden about the PRISM program that came very close. And the NSA, I take it, breathed a sigh of relief that it passed. But now James Sensenbrenner, the Republican author of the 2001 Patriot Act, has introduced the USA Freedom Act, which will ban warrantless bulk metadata collections, as is in the PRISM program. So this is another bite at the apple. Since he was the author of the Patriot Act, you'd think that he'd carry some weight. So do you think maybe this next vote will change things?
I think it very well could change things, at least in the House. There was an amendment that was offered a few months ago by Representative Amash that would have outlawed bulk collection of Americans' telephone records, and that amendment basically failed by 6 or 7 votes, I forget which. But just if a handful of members had changed their votes, that amendment would have passed. And since then, eight members of the House who voted against the amendment have come out and said that they would have changed their vote or that they would change their vote today based on revelations that have come out since the vote. And so I think there are the votes in the House to actually ban the bulk collection of Americans' telephone records, which is one of the things that the Sensenbrenner bill does. There's a companion bill in the Senate that's been offered by Senator Leahy. I think the bill will have a more challenging time in the Senate than in the House, but I think it's a bill that's going to have a lot of appeal to a lot of senators as well as representatives who really feel that the laws that they passed previously were misinterpreted and were really distorted by the NSA in its collection practices. And I think there really is some effort to try to really set the record straight as to what Congress wants the law to look like.
So is anybody trying to rescue the Fourth Amendment here? I mean, it seems that when you consider that the Fourth Amendment was brought in because of the sort of the writ that the British had, you know, of blanket surveillance, if you will, kicking doors down willy-nilly to see what the colonists had in their homes, that in many ways is the motivation. So I see a connection there between bulk collection and the Redcoats' writ.
Absolutely. I think bulk collection is the prototypical general warrant which the Fourth Amendment was designed to prohibit. Now, there is a decades-old Supreme Court case that says that the collection of metadata does not actually implicate the Fourth Amendment because it's information that you willingly give to a third party. But I think there have been a lot of changes since that case was issued in terms of how much information can be collected and how it can be analyzed and sorted. And I think, you know, courts looking at this in the future may take a different position and should take a different position and should decide that this information is protected by the Fourth Amendment. And therefore, there needs to be some particularized basis for seeking the information. It can't just be bulk collection of all Americans' records.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, Elizabeth Goitein, the president has moved to curtail NSA's activity of eavesdropping on the United Nations headquarters in New York, which is, I think, has been quite routine. What's your sense then of these incremental responses to these revelations? We mentioned the House, Sensenbrenner, we mentioned Pfizer, and the president. Since the president appears to have been embarrassed by this, whether he
right.
knew or not is really in question. It sort of reminds me of the old Watergate adage, what did you know and when did you know it? But presumably there's a lot that he can do, and it sounds like he's a little miffed.
I think these incremental changes are intended to try to head off some more fundamental reforms. And the question is, will that work? Will there be a response within Congress, okay, and within the American public, you know, okay, the changes have been made or some changes have been made and let's try it from here and see if those changes help? Or will these changes be perceived as efforts to head off real reform? And will real reform go forward nonetheless? And I think, you know, time will tell, and it will tell very soon.
But in terms of his attitude, do you think that, you know, he's been criticized of being, you know, a reincarnation of George W. Bush. A lot of people expected more of him, and particularly in terms of closing Guantanamo and the National Defense Authorization Act. And in general, he's gotten the reputation of being a kind of Bush's successor rather than a breath of fresh air.
Yes, and I think the difference between President Obama and President Bush is that President Obama doesn't want that reputation. He really would like to be seen as an upholder of the rule of law and someone who does consult with Congress and someone who does respect this country's international obligations. I think that's a significant difference between this president and the previous president. But unfortunately, if that's how President Obama wants to be seen, he has to walk the walk in addition to talking the talk. And I think the problem is that a lot of the policies that we're seeing in some areas, certainly not all of them, look familiar. They look like policies that were in place under the Bush administration.
Well, Elizabeth Goitein, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Elizabeth Goitein, who is the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, which seeks to advance effective national security policies that respect constitutional values and the rule of law. Previously, she was counsel to Senator Feingold, chairman of the Constitution Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking about kleptocracy, the American way of policy.